Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 22. Welcome to this episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. So this one is for the students. Dane DeSaris is a working intern at Edward Rouse Architects, and they're based in Foxborough, Massachusetts. They have another firm in Providence, Rhode Island. Dane and I communicate often on Twitter, and a few weeks back, he reached out to me after reading my recent article about landing your first job in architecture, and he offered to come on the show with two leaders from his firm, Jim Partridge and Steve Tucker, to discuss the roles of interns at Edward Rouse Architects and to talk about what students should be doing to prepare themselves for the hiring process. But before we get into that, I want to talk about two very important items. First, I've created a comprehensive online questionnaire called the Entrepreneur Architect Business Trend Survey. And the intent of the survey is to learn about the entrepreneur architect community and to see into the future of the architecture profession. This is a very important survey to me. It's very important to the future of entrepreneur architect, and I believe it's important to the future of our profession because I think what we're doing here at Entrepreneur Architect is going to be something that will change the future of our profession. So this is a very important survey. It'll take only 10 minutes to take. It does have a bunch of questions. They're very simple. Most questions are yes-no answers, so it'll go very quickly. So I ask you to take 10 minutes out of your schedule today as soon as you finish listening to this podcast and go over to entrearchitect.com/survey and click that. It'll take you to a SurveyMonkey survey, and it'll ask you questions about you personally, about your firm, about the profession, and it will ask you a bunch of questions about entrepreneur architect and what you like and what you don't like, so I can start doing more of what you like and do less of what you don't like. So entrearchitect.com/survey. I'd appreciate that, and thank you very much. The second item is the Charette Venture Group has announced a business plan competition for architects, and it's for architects who are considering starting their own design firms or for existing architecture firms that have been in business for 5 years or less. So it's basically for startup architecture firms. It's a business plan competition, and the first prize winner of the competition will receive $10,000 for the winner of this thing. So this is very exciting. Even better, I am a jury member. I've been invited to be a jury member on this. with a couple of my friends. So Bob Fisher from the associate, he's the associate publisher of Design Intelligence. And then there's Rena Klein. She's an author and a business consultant. I interviewed Rena on episode 12 of the Entrepreneur Architect podcast. So she's a friend of mine. And Osha Wilson, also an alum of the Entrepreneur Architect podcast, episode 10. She's the founder and CEO of Boiled Architecture. And the final jury member, in addition to me, is the founder of the competition and the president of Charette Venture Group, Matt Ostanek. So I'm really excited about this. This is happening right now. So if you can go to architectbusinessplancompetition.com, that's not too difficult to remember, architectbusinessplancompetition.com, and you'll find more details there. And it's pretty exciting. So check that out, and we'll see if one of the Entrepreneur Architect community can win $10,000 towards their startup firm. So architectbusinessplancompetition.com. Okay, so let's get into the feature topic. This episode is filled with information and advice, and we get into the details and discuss specific steps, step by step, for landing your first job. So students, listen up. Anybody looking for a job, listen up. This is a great episode, a great interview. Summer is coming fast, guys, so you should already be out there pounding the pavement and building relationships with the decision makers of the firms that you're interested in. And at the end of the episode, I ask a very important question. I ask each of my guests. There's three of them. This is the first episode with three guests on the line at the same time. And that actually worked out better than I thought. I thought that we might be stumbling on top of one another, but it worked out really well. At the end, I ask them the question, what is the single most important thing students should be doing to prepare as they enter the profession of architecture? I love that question, and they have some really great answers. So listen all the way to the end, and you'll hear their answers for that. They also, it's also a great episode for seasoned architects, because from the flip side, from the architect side who are looking to hire, these guys share a lot of information about how they're doing what they're doing and finding good people. So it's a great interview. So let's get right into it. Dane DeSeris, Jim Partridge, and Steve Tucker, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
It is great to have you guys here on the show today. A few weeks back, Dane reached out to me after reading my article on how to land your first job in architecture, which for the listeners, I'm going to put on the show notes, so there'll be a link on the show notes for that article. But we thought it would be great to have you guys on the show today to talk about internships and what students should be doing to prepare themselves for entering the profession. You have offices in Providence, Rhode Island, and Foxborough, Massachusetts, which is home of the rivals of our New York Giants and New York Jets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And every semester you guys hire interns. So I wanted to have you on the show to discuss your approach to finding the right people for your firm and sort of from the architect's point of view. And then I want to talk a little bit about what students should be doing from their side to look more attractive to firms like yours. So does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. But before we do that, I want to get a little bit about you. When I do interviews, I'd like to have the people that I'm speaking with kind of give us your personal backgrounds, introduce yourselves. Let us know your positions in the firm, and then talk a little bit about your personal story from where you came from, you know, when you decided to become an architect, and tell us a little bit about your journey from that point to where you are today. We'll start with Dane, and then we'll go to Jim, and then we'll end up with Steve.
Okay. Well, hi, my name is Dane DeSeris. I got interested in architecture kind of later, towards the end of my high school career. One thing that I did a lot was I always liked to draw. I used to draw cartoon characters, landscape, scenery, all those kinds of things growing up. And when I was in high school, I excelled more in art classes and enjoyed kind of those kinds of things. And the way that a lot of high schools are structured now is when you're trying to figure out what you're going to do later in life, you take like a little test and you meet with guidance counselors and all those kinds of things. And so when I was getting ready to entering my junior year, starting to think about colleges and those kinds of things, I took the little test that basically asks you questions, you know, what do you like to do in your free time? You know, what do you excel at? Those kinds of things. And, you know, it kind of spit out artistic kind of careers. And some other questions that I answered was that I was interested in selling and like to meet people and those kinds of things. And my guidance counselor actually said to me, well, have you thought about architecture or engineering or those kinds of things that is one part drawing and another part, you know, kind of business? And I said, well, you know, that's kind of interesting, definitely. And so when I applied to colleges, you know, I looked for architecture or other or colleges that would offer not just architecture but business or those kinds of things, and you know, focused on architecture. And actually, when I first got into Wentworth, down in Boston, the reason I chose there is because I'm from New Hampshire, so proximity was close, and they offered me a decent benefits package to attend there. And when I came home for my first summer, my mother actually approached me and said, hey, did you know that there's an architect that lives down the street? You know, you should go maybe see him and talk with him a little bit, and maybe it might help you. And I said, okay. So I went down there, and I just knocked on his door one day, and he's an architect in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, for a great firm called Oak Point Associates. And he was very welcoming, showed me, gave me the opportunity to come down to his office during the summer to check out the firm that he worked at, you know, kind of like a job shadow, and really let me see everything that they do, their models, their computer, got to tour their office, met some of the people in their office, younger people, and, you know, really solidified my interest in architecture. And I went back to Wentworth for my sophomore year with a really renewed kind of spirit, you know, knowing where that I was kind of in a place where I really, you know, wanted to be. And so when I graduated, it was difficult to find an architecture firm. I graduated in 2012, and in the Boston area, it was still a little bit difficult to be a new graduate with limited experience. And so I applied, you know, pretty rigorously to many, many places. And I actually received a call from a guy that did real estate management. And he said, you know it's not architecture, but I'm kind of interested in your background being architecture. And I think, you know, it might be a good fit. And it was in the downtown Boston area. And so I decided, well, you know, got to make some money, pay my student loans, those kinds of things. So I'll stay close to the built environment. And I went to work for them for a little while. And, you know, I, you know, decided that I still wanted to be in architecture. So I continued to hone my portfolio and, you know, continued making contacts and all those kinds of things. And married a girl that I met in college, and we moved down to Foxborough. And I was commuting on the train to go to Boston every day. And I kept applying and started to apply down in the regional Foxborough area. And the guys here at Edward Rouse Architects were hiring, and came in for an interview, met them. It was really great, right down the street from where I live. I live the closest to the office of everyone, a little over a mile. And basically I said that I really wanted to be in architecture, and, you know, being right down the street, you know, I can be here very early in the morning and stay very late at night. Kind of, you know, when you're young like that with limited experience, you kind of got to do whatever it takes.
Yeah, exactly.
In the way, state of the economy, where it was at the time. And so, you know, a lot of hours. Actually, my first week, I worked till 10 o'clock at night on a couple of nights because we had a job that needed to go out. And my boss, Steve, said, you know, welcome.
Yeah.
And
all the items that you promised, Dean, we took you up on.
Yeah, so I've really enjoyed it ever since. And being in a smaller firm, the one thing that I greatly enjoy the most, as opposed to a larger firm, is that I get to see the whole picture of architecture. I've started on schematic design. I've worked on construction documents. I've been in the field doing field reports. I've helped write existing conditions reports at the very beginning of projects. I've been to client meetings. You know, I've been very grateful for the opportunity that the firm has given me, and I really enjoy where I am.
So how far are you along in your IDP?
So I'm fully immersed in IDP because I get plenty of opportunity. I get many types of hours in all the categories, which has been great. I have started studying. I just joined a organization up at the Boston Society of Architects with a club that's all studying for the exams. We have kids in our group from Canon Design, Deppley Bullfinch, other local area firms, and we help each other out. We create a little Dropbox with study materials, and I have my first dramatic design test coming up on March 3rd, so wish me luck.
Yeah, and that's coming up quick. That's a great idea to have a club like that with all the support, especially with the online tools that we have today.
Yep. Right. We're a really aggressive study group. We're hoping to take a test every 6 to 8 weeks. And because I have the MArc degree, I can take my tests early and hopefully be done with my tests and then just have to finish my IDP hours and then have my registration. So.
Are you all working on the same schedule where you're all kind of working towards the same deadlines, or are you just supporting one another?
Yep, we are. Everybody will be taking their schematic design tests during that week of March 3rd, and then we're going right into structures to get a hard one out of the way. So,
well, that's a great idea. That is a great tip for any students who are listening to, if there's no clubs around, make one, because that sounds like a great idea to, you know, hold yourself accountable and get the thing done, you know, quickly.
Yep, it's been phenomenal.
Yeah, good. So how about you, Jim? What's your story?
Kind of similar to Dane. I graduated from Roger Williams College, now university, back in 1984.
That's my alma mater.
Yes. So it's almost 30 years ago when I graduated. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
But I actually got involved in architecture by almost accident. Similar to Dane, when I was in high school, in junior high school for that matter, I took all the art that I possibly could because I just enjoyed all the different facets of putting art together and, you know, kind of exploring, developing myself. And I got to the point where in my junior year, I had all the art that they had to offer. And I luckily had an instructor at high school that said, hey, you know, we're going to develop a special art program. And there was a couple of us. And we were asked to basically design our own house, build a model. And I have always had to build things, construct things, even at an early age. So I think it was in my background, my nature, from an early start. And I kind of fell in love with it. It was, you know, we sort of left alone, and we came up with our own floor plan, and we built a model and presented it to the class, and it just got me really psyched. So I went to the guidance department in my high school, and, you know, they knew that I had a strong math background, and, you know, you'd be perfect for engineering, and they really didn't guide me to architecture initially. So I actually tried engineering to start, and did quite well, but in my gut, my soul, it was just not enough for me personally. So I decided to take an architectural studio class. And instructor that I had at the time, Rico Malazzi, he was always very passionate about architecture as a rule anyway. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I remember Rico. I saw Rico this summer, actually. We had a 25-year reunion, and Rico showed up to the reunion, so it was good to see him.
Yeah, he was a great, great guy, and he really inspired me to stay in architecture, and I made the decision. But I actually, going through Roger Williams, minored in mathematics because I just liked mathematics. So I actually got an associate's degree in mathematics and obviously the Bachelor of Science after 4 years, and ultimately got my fifth-year degree shortly thereafter. So from that, when I graduated, I was working for my dad at the time doing cooking. not really looking, but... there was a large architectural firm in Rhode Island here called Keyes Associates, and one of the representatives actually reached out to the school and asked if there were any interns or a recent graduate that was looking for a position as an intern, and at the time, Roseanne Evans recommended me to them, and that's sort of how I fell into working on the professional side of things. So I was actually working for an architectural engineering, predominantly an engineering firm, but I was sort of in charge of doing shop drawings, doing some hand drafting at that time, whatever needed to be done, schedules, roof plans. Also got involved with some construction administration right off the bat, and was able to sort of coordinate between the different disciplines within the firm, both in Providence and Waltham at that time, ensuring that, you know, shop drawings and paperwork was getting to where it needed to go so that things, you know, stayed on schedule. So I was acclimated to a lot of different things right off the bat, and it was actually a good experience. I learned a lot from not just engineers, but other architects. And one of the architects that I was sort of mentoring underneath at that time, my advisor, had a strong background in roof systems and roof analysis. So I learned quite a bit on roof to the point where I'm sort of the roof guy now in the firm. When anything comes up relative to some strange or unusual items that we need to get involved with. So I worked there for about 2 years, and then one of the architects that was also involved with my internship actually left the firm, went to a smaller firm, and at that time, when he went to the other firm about 4 or 5 months later, I got a call from him and said, hey, how would you like to leave where you are and work for a smaller firm and be exposed to a lot more? And I jumped at that, that opportunity, and I did it. And I ended up working for the Providence Partnership in Providence, Rhode Island, more of a heavily designed firm for architects. We didn't have an in-house consultant, but, you know, it sort of gave me the opportunity to experience sort of the true architectural side of things in terms of design, coordinating with consultants that are not in our building, which was kind of unique. And at that time, I was actually filling the position of the president of our current firm's spot because he had basically moved out of the Providence Partnership at the time and formed his own firm and started to, you know, develop himself independent from what we were doing. So it was kind of a thing where I was sort of filling what Ted was doing and stayed with our firm for about 14 years, got registered in 89. And developed into what I am today as a project architect and an associate with the firm, and was involved with all aspects of the business. About 2000-2001, there was a drastic decline in economics around this area, and we were sort of not that busy at the time, and the future didn't look great relative to the Providence Partnership. It kind of went down in size. And we actually were talking to Ted, who used to work for the partnership, and there was another associate, Greg Andre, that was at the partnership that, you know, we've been involved with for many years, and said, hey, why don't we just get together and be one firm? We all have similar backgrounds in our philosophies on how we approach architecture. And it just seemed like a great fit, so that's what we did. 2000, we joined up with Edward Rouse Architects and basically brought our office over to their Providence office, and they had just recently moved into Providence in Pawtucket. And, you know, it's been a great experience kind of working with people with all the same kind of philosophies and approaches relative to projects, clients, and it's been good. And then a few years back, we decided, you know, we got to expand and constantly evolve into something bigger and better, hopefully. And we got the chance to do an MSBA school project, which is new and got us into the door in terms of school design in Massachusetts. And that kind of promoted us, you know, expanding out into the Foxborough area. And that's sort of where we're at right now. So I'm registered in three states, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and I'm currently pursuing Connecticut. Again, you know, there's always room for improvement and expansion all the time.
Right. So how many people are in the firm now?
We kind of fluctuate between 16 and 18 people currently. You know, we sort of split it down the middle between the Providence office. I think we get a little bit more people in the Providence office than we do in the Mass office. But, you know, depending on what we get and how we get it, also depends on how many people we have at any any given time. But we're not the kind of firm that once we hire somebody, we just hire them for a project. We recognize that, you know, we're trying to build our team and get involved with the sort of progression of learning of our architecture in our firm with all of our interns or associates as a rule, because, you know, we sort of have sort of like a family atmosphere with our team members and personnel. So that may be a little different than most firms. You know, some firms do hire, you know, based on what they have. And, you know, once it's over and, you go to somebody else that has the work.
Yeah.
We constantly strive to keep our work production up to a point where we can satisfy, you know, paying people, you know, on a regular basis without having to get into sort of like a partial employment situation.
Right, right. That's not always easy from an employer's point of view.
Absolutely. It's always, you know, that's always a struggle that you have to deal with.
Right, right. So, Steve, what about you? What's your story?
My story is completely different from the first two stories. grew up, my family owned a business, a campground, and so I grew up kind of in the trades and construction, working on heavy equipment and so forth, doing things with my hands and being creative in that fashion. When I was going to high school, I would have odd jobs working for masons and working on, doing drywall work and plastering and so forth. Always trying to learn, from the tradesmen how to do different things. It was something that my father actually ingrained in me when I was young. One very important thing that he told me when I was young is to always learn from the older people that you're surrounded by. They have a lot to offer. And so I spent my youth learning a lot of the hands-on stuff. Once I graduated high school, actually before I graduated high school, I kind of found myself working in those trades, working for construction companies, you know, during the summer break. And once you work through one winter, you find that you probably have a totally different perspective on working in a trade. It's a very tough life. Yeah. I tended to then look at the people I was working with and how they lived and went about their everyday life. And it was something that right away I could see that it wasn't something that I was going to be, you know, while I liked to create, it just wasn't something that where I wanted to be for my entire life. So during high school, my senior year, I got involved in the mechanical drafting class, and it later turned into an architectural drafting class because I had completed all the work that they in the curriculum that they had to offer. So I basically excelled past their expectations, got into the architectural drafting aspect of things, and then proceeded to follow my teacher from high school. He went on to teach at a local college, and I followed him there, and it was really a one-year type of college, a community college type of thing, and where I received a diploma in architecture. So from there, I ventured out to try to find a job, and it just so happened that Edward Rouse Architects is on the same street as my college, so it was very convenient for me to start there part-time while I was still going to school. I walked down the street after school and joined the office at Edward Rouse Architects, and I think I've been here, besides the owner and one secretary, I've been here for 25 years. So I'm kind of a loyal person, I guess I would say. Now I've learned an incredible amount here at the firm over the years, and I kind of come at things from a different perspective, having taken the path that I took. And I've actually finally started the process. I've gone through the IDP process, and I've taken 6 of the 7 exams. I'm scheduled to take the final exam next month for the structurals. And so pretty soon I'll be legal.
Oh, that's excellent. That's a long journey.
It is very long.
Yeah, congratulations. You're almost there.
Mark, I have to comment on that. I have to say about friggin' time. I mean, the knowledge that Steve has, you know, he's more than competent to be a registered architect in any state. Honestly, he's got a tremendous background in building technology, and, you know, he makes designs come to fruition relative to putting it all together, like architectures and the details. That's what Steve's all about. He really is.
Yeah, I think working in construction, from my point of view, I've actually written about this. I think hands-on construction should be a requirement for licensure.
Yeah,
I think that every architect should have some sort of minimum experience swinging a hammer and carrying, you know, concrete block in the winter. I've done that, and I know exactly what you're talking about, Steve.
Understood. I had a summer job once where my job was to clean brick.
Yeah, I've done that too, yeah.
From a renovation project, and that is not an easy job.
No, it's not.
One thing I find in the business is that there are a lot of architects out there that do not have any hands-on training.
Yeah, most don't.
And they really don't know what they're drawing, yeah. and they lose a lot of respect from the contractors that they work with. And there's a lot of trust issues between the architects and the contractors when they sense you don't know what you're talking about.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. There's a whole nother topic to talk about on that. I could do an entire show on that. That's near and dear to my heart. I come from my father's an auto mechanic, and my uncles were carpenters, and so I grew up in that world. And I heard them talk about how they thought about architects and mm-hmm. what their feelings were for architects, and there wasn't a whole lot of respect there. And so mm-hmm. before I became an architect, I wanted to know why, and I worked several summers with my uncle and other contractors, specifically to learn how contractors think and to understand where they're coming from. So now when I'm on a job site, I have a great relationship with the contractors because I know exactly what they're thinking and how they think.
True. And, you know, one of the philosophies that we have in our firm is we go to great detail to make sure things are coordinated and that there is a lot of good information in our drawings and specifications. So that kind of frees up time on our side of things because there's less questions coming from the contractor to keep things going relative to the construction side of things.
Right.
And it kind of goes the other way relative to some of the contractors and how they feel about working with us because they know that we put the extra effort in terms of putting our documents together and coordinating them.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a key piece to our business, especially if you want to get repeat work from clients. And, you know, We've had success over the years having clients that are literally, you know, 25, 30 years over the years, you know, keep coming back to us because of that.
Yeah, that's absolutely a critical piece to what we do. So let's talk about hiring.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about how interns, you know, the roles that interns play on a daily basis in your firm. Let's start with that.
Sure. So this is Dane, and being a new graduate, young professional myself, the firm has kind of given me the opportunity to kind of manage our co-op students a lot more. And, you know, kind of the interview process, reviewing candidates. When I first came here, we had co-op students, but we weren't really connecting quite yet with a lot of the schools. And so we started to connect more with the school since I've been here speaking with Wentworth. You know, I've also given some more of my time reaching out to the BAC, the Boston Architectural College, and other surrounding schools to try to find out, you know, to get the best candidates in here. Because instead of, we wanted to switch more from just only looking at a couple people and then just hiring them to actually starting to think about how we're reviewing candidates and finding students that are what we want, you know. And so what we have kind of started to do is our co-op students, being in a smaller firm, get to do a lot. Basically, as much as you can handle, we will let them do. You know, we have two co-op students in our office right now, one in here in Foxborough who is a Wentworth student, and then one that comes part-time down in Rhode Island office who's a Roger Williams student. And you know, they work on construction details. They go out into the field to do existing conditions measuring, We teach them to write field reports. They do square foot calculations for cost estimates. You know, pretty much whenever there's an opportunity, we also, during our interview process, look for students that are hungry, kids that will jump at the opportunity to do something, you know, will stay late to get to be a part of, you know, something that we're working on in the late night hours.
But it's more than that, though, too, Dane. We actually even get our interns involved with marketing strategies in terms of, you know, soliciting RFQs and, you know, how we respond to those relative to proposals and putting those things together, too. So a lot of the graphics that they use in school, we incorporate in our day-to-day business, too.
Yep.
So you're exposing them to pretty much every aspect of the firm as much as possible.
As much as possible, correct. You know, to the point where we actually even, you know, we'll invite them to project meetings that are construction-related meetings, just to give them an idea of some of the questions, some of the concerns, some of the issues that come up on a weekly basis, for that matter, relative to a project. And that really, I've seen, is a true eye-opening, because, you know, if you miss something on a drawing or something isn't there that needs to be addressed, you know, that translates into budget, and, you know, how do we deal with that? And, you know, then it's, you know, how do you address those situations in terms of submitting information back to them so that they can get that back into the project and get it figured into the budget aspect of things. So, you know, we try to expose, you know, rather than just keeping them in the office, but to try to get them out and get them interacting with, you know, clients that we deal with on a regular basis is extremely important to us.
Right. So, Dane, you were talking about co-op students. That's students who are still in school who, as part of their program, they're working in a firm?
Yes. So we work with a couple of colleges in the area. One is Wentworth, and they have co-op students. They run trimesters. And so based on where a student is within their program, they have co-op students going on co-op in the spring, the summer, and the fall, based on where you are. So like sophomores might have it in their freshman, in their spring semester, you know, juniors might have it in their summer, you know, and there might be a senior that has it in the fall, you know. So all times of the year, we have possibility for one more student, which is great. Roger Williams, schools that have more traditional path have summer. Mm-hmm. We work with that as well. And then we're just starting to get into the BAC, the Boston Architectural College, where their students are working full-time, and then they attend class twice a week. And so, you know, they can be just, they go at nighttime, you know, from like 5 to 9 at night, so they leave a little early to go up to Boston to attend class.
Great. Jim, I have a question for you. Who's actually running the day-to-day, you know, business of the firm? Is that you, Jim?
We sort of, all the project architects that are registered in the firm,
yep,
sort of have their own projects. And then obviously the true leadership is Edward Rouse, the president of the company. So all the project architects and managers that are in our firm actually sort of report back to Ted with progress for any and all projects that we have. And we usually have project meetings as a rule every Wednesday morning, kind of go over where we're at and, you know, what's coming our way and what type of issues we have, if there are any. So that's how it sort of works. And, you know, usually we break our firm up into small teams, and each team will have, you know, several projects and, you know, kind of bouncing between each one of the project managers that are in the firm.
And then the day-to-day sort of business end of things that doesn't relate to projects, sort of the, you know, the receivables and payables kind of stuff, is that Ted and somebody working with Ted?
Oh, we have our own. We have an office manager,
okay,
that basically is responsible for making sure that we send out invoices and pay invoices and things of that nature. And that person bounces between the project managers and architects that are involved with each one of the projects to make sure that, you know, she's on course doing the right thing. So,
right. She's got the toughest job in the firm.
I wouldn't say that. We try to make it easy for her. Yeah. So, you know, but she's very, very stringent relative to, you know, counting every cent,
yeah,
like we all have to do in these days. So,
right. Do interns have any exposure to that end of the business at all, or is it all just project work?
It's primarily project work. Until you get a few years under your belt and sort of get knocked around relative to the College of Hard Knocks and are close to becoming a professional registered engineer or architect in some cases, that's when you start spearheading those kind of things.
Right.
Getting involved with putting together proposals for different projects.
Okay. So from a student's point of view, what should they be doing to prepare as they start their search for a position as an intern?
So something that I sent you yesterday, which you said you put in the show notes, which is great. Thank you very much. Is we have a little checklist that we have made, and actually one of our team members went down to Roger Williams yesterday for a portfolio review with the students down there. And one of the things that we look for the most when reviewing candidates. Now, I have a couple questions as well. Would you like us to speak about the process that we go through when we evaluate co-op students, or more about kind of what students can do to stand out?
I would say both. Let's start with how you sort of look at interns and how your hiring process works, and then I'd like to sort of go from the student's point of view what they should be doing to prepare for that process.
Okay, so Steve, would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, basically our business model, is, if you haven't gotten the picture already, is that we try to bring in young minds. We basically value our employees, and we hope that they value us equally. And most of our employees have been here quite a while, as myself, like I said. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring in new, younger individuals through the co-op process who end up becoming full-time members of our firm. So as we go through the evaluation, obviously, we'd like them to spend a few terms here for us to really, evaluate them fully. But we try to initially, select people that have, as we mentioned before, some sort of background in construction, some sort of drive in their life that it shows initiative on their end, and it shows prolonged initiative, something in their life that shows dedication. We recently had an applicant apply to us that had Eagle Scout on their resume, which we found to be very informative. It really showed us that the person was really dedicated to what they enjoyed, and that's what we're looking for in people. We're looking for people who are dedicated. We're looking for people who are hands-on. We're looking for people who want to learn, who have drive and want to succeed. And we're looking for, in the long run, people that we can bring in full-time process.
Well, I think part of the process too is when the intern is in our firm going through the process. I mean, we have certain core ways of approaching projects that not everybody would want to do it that way, I guess. And we want to make sure that the co-op student also is comfortable with the way we approach projects and our philosophies about, coming up with a solution for a project. And sometimes when we actually hire people that have had a lot of experience, sometimes it becomes a good fit, sometimes it's not so much a good fit because their core philosophies are just totally opposite from our core philosophies and not a good match. Where if we're actually bringing in somebody young, we can introduce how we approach and what we do and how we do it and, kind of feel them out as we're both developing together,
How would you want them to reach out to you? Do they typically mail in a resume or email a resume, attach a portfolio, or are they walk-ins, or is it really all through a formal process between the schools and the firms?
So I'll talk a little bit about our kind of nuts and bolts that we look for. I know that you were looking to create kind of like a checklist for people, people who are listening that can kind of stuff.
Before we get into the school aspect, I mean, we get a combination of all of them. We've had people walk in with their resumes. to sort of present themselves. We obviously get mail-ins all the time. We also get, you know, inquiries even through the internet. That way, in addition to us reaching out to the co-op world relative to the different universities and schools that offer that. So it varies depending on, you know, the individual, truthfully.
Mm-hmm. Recently,
go ahead.
Recently, we've been teaming up with a lot of schools in the area to try to work with their programs, getting our name out to them, letting them know who we are, what we do, and trying to just become more involved with the schools in the area, and try to, you know, give back to them and for them to help us in our whole process. Dane had mentioned just recently went to BAC, the Boston Architectural College. We also had another individual in our firm go to Roger Williams University last night, and reviewing people's resumes and so forth. So we're trying to get all our team members involved in the area colleges and universities, and we're trying to work as a team with them to try to get the best candidate for our firm in the long run. That's really our goal.
So would you say that resumes and portfolios are still very, very important?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we look for, you know, we're still pretty standard on the portfolio, the cover letter, the resume,
Yeah. Those
kinds of things. Some of the things when we first start reviewing students is we take a look at what they've submitted. You know, how is it presented? We prefer when a student submit through the internet, that it's just one attachment. Usually has a cover letter first, then their resume, and then we think the best way to apply for a co-op position is to create like a small snapshot of your portfolio with some of your best images, two or three, because, you know, we don't have time to look at an entire portfolio. So those three things coming in one single PDF so we can know, you know, why you want to work for our company, who you are on your resume, and then also a little bit, gives us a little bit of an idea about the work that you can do. And for us from there, we review, you know, we have been getting a real surge of applicants at the colleges we are connected to. And so we've been getting many, many, many people. And we created kind of a structure of evaluating, you know, because we have work to do as well, where we do an initial review process, you know, taking a look at those three things. And then what we do after that is we reach out to some students that we'd like to have come in for an interview. And we actually have a pre-interview questionnaire, which gives us a little bit more of an idea of who they are. Ask like, who is your role model? Give me an example of a project that you've worked on and a problem that you've encountered. What are you into outside of school? Are we having a problem with the sound?
Yeah, I think a little bit.
Oh, okay. It seems to be okay. And so from there, when we get those questionnaires back, when the student comes in, it allows us to give us some talking points to start on. And so from there, what we look for when students come in for an interview, are they excited about architecture? Are they, you know, do they speak well? Do they dress well? Those kinds of things, because we expect our students to be able to talk on the phone to engineers, to go out in the field and see the client, the contractor. So those are big for us. We also like students that ask us questions. You know, they want to know more about us as a firm, who we are as people, those kinds of things. And then after the interview, some things that weigh a lot for us, which we find very important, is did any of them send a handwritten thank you note? You know, that's an old tactic, but still goes a very long way today. And so that's kind of our snapshot, if you will. There's the checklist that you're going to put in the show notes the students at Roger Williams yesterday, they all wanted more copies, and I think we're probably going to get a surge today of this checklist of things that can help them.
So I'll put that on the show notes. Could you describe a little bit about what's on that checklist?
Just
describe the intent of it.
Sure. So the first part during the interview process, we look for students that are dressed well. You know, do you wear just a suit? Is it clean? You know, not a tux, you know, whatever. Yeah. Did you bring copies of your cover letter, resume, and teaser sheet? Because you don't know if a person's not going to know if I printed them out. You know, we like our students to bring them in with them. Does a person speak with confidence? Do they ask questions? You know, do they want to know about us? This weighs a lot for us. Do they research our company? Do they kind of have an idea of what we believe in as a company? Are they motivated? That's important to us. And then also, we like them to speak about what perhaps they can offer us. You know, it's, we know that many of our students are young and they don't have too much, you know, they're just in school, but you know, there's a lot that students offer us. Do they know about new types of technology? You know, those things are important.
And also, like, what kind of interests they have outside of the office, too, also bodes well, too, in terms of what kind of interests they have and what they like to do, kind of follow suit to some of the things that we like to do when we're, you know, sort of decompressing from the office environment. So a lot of that, you know, is important.
So then on the resume, you know, we like to see clean resumes, is very important to us. One kind of font, not stylized, you know, regular Calibri, one page. Is your information right there and available? Your contact info, where you go to school, where you live, those kinds of things. The other thing that weighs a lot for us is, do you have any kind of experience, you know, with any construction jobs? Have you, do you have any hands-on experience? Maybe if you've worked in another firm, another co-op, that's obviously very important. But then also, what we like to see is, you know, do you have a work history? You had a high school, you know, our students, did they have a high school job? How long did they work there? Did they get promoted? You might have started as a dishwasher, but you made your way all the way up to a shift supervisor. That means a lot to us. That means you're capable of taking on more responsibility, all those kinds of things. And then another thing is, do you talk about your coursework? What are you learning in school? That's important for us because, you know, we're not in school anymore. We're not, you know, we're not entirely sure what the schools are doing. We try to, you know, have conversations with people we have relationships with at those schools, but, you know, we want to hear about, you know, the structure, the courses that they're in. So then under the portfolio, now this might sound hugely contradictory to what a professor might tell you, but this is kind of something that we like is the portfolio simple? We believe that portfolios should be simple and clean. Big images, a minimal amount of text that describes the project, also with a little statement that says what program you created it in. You know, I want to know that you made this fantastic image in Revit. You can render in 3ds Max. You can draw in AutoCAD. You know, you can create your portfolio in InDesign. That's important. Also, you know, do you have, spend the time to not have any typos? You know, you wouldn't believe that how many we find on those. And then if it comes in through internet, what's important is it a small file size? You know, I can't be opening 25 megabyte attachments that take an hour to upload on my computer. You know, by then I've lost interest. So small file size, doing that single PDF, which we talked about before, you know, nobody wants to open 6 attachments. And then also one thing that we notice getting from co-op students is, what are the name of your PDFs? You know, we have a little thing on here that says bad, you know, portfolio revised final 2, yada, yada. But a good might be just your name and portfolio, something that's clean. And then on your cover letter, for us, research goes a long way. You know, do you know about our company, our goals? We also like you to elaborate on your career objectives that you stated in your resume. You know, your intentions. What are you hoping to learn? That's important to us. And then also one of the things that we weighs a lot for us that you really are spending the time to put forth the detail is, you know, did you sign it, you know, electronically? Did you scan in your signature, put it on there, use Photoshop, know how to do that? You know, that's important to us.
Versatility in your documentation is sort of a key relative to our review process.
Yep, definitely.
So it's just demonstrating, you know, what you're acquainted with and how well you use it is, you know, bodes well.
Yeah.
That is great advice. That is an extremely valuable document that you sent us that will be on our show notes. And everybody can download that for free. I would say that there's a lot of information there. And I would say the one key takeaway is keep it short and simple, but really, really good. But not so huge that it's overwhelming to look at, that somebody doesn't want to even take the time to look at it. Mm-hmm. I think many students want to impress everybody and show them everything that they have. And it's a great tip to just show them your very best work and then have them ask for more.
Right. Because you got to remember, we're looking at a lot of these, and time is of the essence to all of us.
Yeah. So that's exactly what I was hoping that we could talk about. So we're just about at the end of our conversation here. I want to ask you one last question, and you can each give me an answer if you'd like. And it's not necessarily about hiring specifically, and not necessarily about getting a job. It's more about the profession in general. What's the one single most important thing students should be doing to prepare themselves for their futures in architecture?
You want to start with that, Jim?
Give me a few on that.
Okay. I'll start. So one of the things that I think a student can do the most to prepare for entering the profession is acting like, you know, representing yourself in where you want to be, you know, down the road. You know, are you trying to think about how you speak to others? How confident are you speaking to people you don't know? Do you dress well? You know, do you just look the part? You know, it's very important. They say there's a famous thing, dress for the job you want to have, you know. And so thinking about how you structure your portfolio, your cover letter, you know, reaching out to other people, looking for help to help refine those skills and, you know, putting on a very professional look is important, because when you're young, just graduating, everybody already is going to know that you're a fresh face. You know, I get this all the time when I'm out in the field. You know, I'm only just starting to learn. So the most important thing that I can do for my firm is to be able to represent the firm well and be able to speak, you know, clearly and, you know, be able to be a part. And they know, you know, contractors, engineers, everyone knows that my, you know, construction experience and all those things are only just beginning. But, you know, being able to act like a mature adult, and being where, you know, I want to be in 5 years already now is very important.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. I think that's one thing that a lot of students, they're so focused on their resumes and their portfolios that one-on-one personal presentation skill that isn't really taught in specifically in architecture school, other than presenting your work in front of in a crit. That's something that we can all work on, for one, but I think students, when that's something that would separate them from other students, that if you walked into a building and meet with potential hiring architects, and you can present yourself in a confident way and speak intelligently and have good grammar and look the part without going too far and mm-hmm. without being, you know, sort of overconfident and arrogant, because that's a turnoff. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that certainly could separate you from other students.
The one thing too is,
go ahead, Steve.
Is to, they need to be themselves. You know, it's pretty easy to see through people if they're putting up a front. You know, they need to really spend the time, invest in themselves while they're in school, focus on their long-term goals, and really do everything they can to achieve them. You know, if they need to, do extra classes online or whatever, or just learn about how things are constructed. You know, do what it takes to earn the job you want. Don't just expect school to give you everything you need for that job. Because especially with architecture, it's not just, honestly, and of course, you know the road I took to get here, but school is just a bridge to get you the job. You don't really learn how to be a real architect, in my opinion, until you get on the job and you actually learn the real world and how things are constructed and how you know, just learn everything there is associated with it. And in my opinion, really don't get that taught to you in school. They teach you how to design. They teach you long hours. They teach you how to be, dependable and reliable and so forth. But what you really need is to involve yourself in the trades early, kind of involve yourself in being dedicated to whatever interests you, and show dedication. Show that those are your traits, that you once you get the job, that you can apply your traits to that job.
That's excellent.
I mean, I think the other thing too, the IDP process is key, because basically once you get through with that, that's sort of the bare minimum of what you need to know as a professional architect. But more importantly, through the IDP process, is you're going to learn from the others that are around you, from all of their experiences and all of what they've experienced. And sometimes it's not just doing, but it's listening to others that have had the experience, have gone through the process, is extremely valuable. You know, sometimes not saying, but just listening mm-hmm. is extremely valuable. Because you got people that are around you that have got, you know, 30, 25, 40 years plus doing this, and they've been doing it for a long time. And there's a reason they're doing it for a long time, because, you know, they've been proven. And just getting involved with the people that are working on other things, you know, listening to their conversations and how they approach things is all part of learning. So you try to learn something new every day is my motto, and that should never end.
This has been a great conversation. Thank you, all three of you, for being with me today.
I appreciate it.
You, Mark, it's an honor. Thank you.
And like I said, everything that we talked about will be on the show notes, including that PDF. And so I appreciate your time, guys.
Okay.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. So I don't think it gets much better than that. Not for students or anybody else looking for a job, or for architects who are hiring students. These guys shared a lot of information with us, and I appreciate it. I want to thank Dane, Jim, and Steve for joining me here on the show and for sharing so much valuable information with the Entrepreneur Architect community. Before I wrap up, I want to remind you one more time to take the Entrepreneur Architect Business Trends Survey. It's a very important step for taking things here at Entrepreneur Architect to the next level, and it's going to take us one step closer becoming that influential force that this thing sure will become. But I can't do it alone. I need your help. So as soon as I sign off here, please go to entrearchitect.com/survey and spend just 10 minutes of your time sharing your thoughts with me. I would appreciate it so much. You have no idea how much I appreciate your support with what I'm doing here at Entrepreneur Architect. And I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. So until next week, my name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an Entrepreneur Architect. See you next week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.